What's up, everyone? I'm Andrew Steinwald, and this is Zima Red. On this show, we speak with the users, founders, and creatives that are diving into the world of unique digital assets, also called non-fungible tokens.
Andrew Steinwald is the managing partner of Sifirmion, an investment firm focused on the NFT ecosystem. All opinions expressed by Andrew and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Sifirmion. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Sifirmion or related entities may maintain positions in the assets discussed in this podcast.
My guest today is Yuri Lifshitz. Yuri is the founder of SuperDAO, which is a platform for creating DAOs and DAO-related infrastructure. Essentially, SuperDAO wants to become the one-stop shop for all things launching, operating, and expanding DAOs. This episode is a crash course in the present and future of DAOs. Yuri and I discuss how Yuri worked on DAO and Web3-based technology before Bitcoin even existed, the ways DAOs are better than companies and the ways that they are not, the major pain points around DAOs, how DAOs can coexist with government regulation, how investing is a new form of social connection and tribalism, and why we are at the very beginnings of the DAO revolution. Please enjoy my conversation with Yuri. Yuri, thank you so much for joining me today. Super excited to chat with you. And to get us started, I'd love to hear a little bit about your background.
Yeah, thank you. Likewise, very happy to be here. I was born in Russia, St. Petersburg, in a family of mathematicians, and was growing up as a mathematician as well. Participated in Math Olympiads, won a couple gold medals in International Math Olympiad, did PhD in computer science at the age of 23, and was teaching crypto before it was crypto. So I was teaching grad level courses in things like Byzantine fault agreements and Byzantine general agreements and zero knowledge proofs before Bitcoin was invented. So back then it felt like purely mathematical problems with zero applications. It was really fun to see how I was proven wrong and how useful it all became. And then I moved to the United States. I was a scientist at Caltech and Yahoo. And then I started about four companies, some more successful, some less. all of them were about community. And so my kind of life thread is building community platforms. I started events, I started co-working companies, I started boot camps, I started education ventures and so on. One of the companies where I was a core member and founding CEO of a subsidiary, a key subsidiary, was recently acquired for $80 million. Most recently, I was running a company called OpenLand, which was a direct competitor to Discord, so a messenger for communities. And that was a good product, but not a great business. We came to market too late and couldn't find a meaningful enough differentiation. We went through Y Combinator, raised a couple million dollars, built really good quality product, but there was no business opportunity that we could find. We open sourced that company, that product in October. You can still find it both on GitHub and Figma. Figma now has a good open source hub as well. It's pretty popular on Figma as a kind of design system that you can copy. And and so then I realized that the best version of a community is a DAO. And like my whole career prepared me to build a DAO platform.
Amazing. Okay, so I want to go back a little bit. So you said you started four companies and they're all focused on communities. So yep. Being a mathematician and, you know, scientist, I feel like it's a little bit of a different, you know, I figured that, you know, you'd be kind of busy coding or you know, building out software products or something. So why were your companies all focused on communities, which is a very kind of, you know, different aspect than like hard code, I guess?
Yeah, funny enough, back when I was a mathematician, my favorite branch of mathematics was graph theory, which was about, you know, groups of people like social networks and like how money flows or whatever, how railroads work. So even back in mathematics, I used the mathematics that was most social, and I like to analyze social networks and news and viral news. My biggest scientific achievement was probably a study of why and how news go viral. So I did it when I was a staff researcher at Yahoo, and it's still live. The study is still live. Funny enough, I got a call from BuzzFeed CEO John Aperetti then the very next day, and he was like, "Hey, this is good, very useful research. You should work for us." Yeah, so it was
that's awesome.
Great times.
Very, very cool. All right, so and you said that you launched a company called OpenLand, and it was a Discord competitor. What was the thought process around, hey, Discord's pretty good, but I know I can improve it massively. I'm gonna pursue this.
Yeah, it was really coming a little bit more from my co-founder than myself, because he was building messengers his whole life. He was early at VK, he was a core contributor to Telegram, and he basically builds messengers at all companies he's part of. So we kind of gradually fall into become a messenger. And yeah, we had about four different angles. So there is like maybe more around paid chat groups, or more about chat communities for creators like TikTokers or YouTubers, or more about chats between different companies, like business-to-business chat, where, you know, Slack is more like inside one company, and, you know, OpenLand would be a business chat between companies. So it had like different angles, but none of them proved to be, you know, a good foundation for a new company, at least for us.
And then you also mentioned that you've been through YC. So can you tell me like what it's like to go through Y Combinator?
Well, by now there is 4,000 applicants, like, you know, graduates or more. So they all share the experience. For us, fundraising element was great. So it was like focusing the time on like demo day goals and getting to something presentable in a fixed amount of time, and running a structured process where you can talk to 100 or 200 investors in a short period of time. Ability to modify, improve your pitch, or being very critical. I would say the number one skill that I got from YC was short answers. So ability to answer the question in a single question, in a single sentence, in 8 seconds or less, and ability to go through 50 questions and 50 answers in 10 minutes. And I'm training my new team and everyone I work with on that skill.
Wow. Okay. So that's super, super interesting. Is there some sort of correlation between effective communication and like outperformance just broadly?
Well, I think there are different types of businesses. There are a type of business where like fast thinking and fast, we call it a clock speed. So like being on a fast clock speed is very beneficial. The fast moving markets where you can't, you know, think for 6 months of what's the right product is. There are like competitive, fast moving, you know, markets like DAO infrastructure is an incredibly fast moving market. While others, like if you build nuclear plants, I think you have time to, you know, answer questions in 3 sentences.
Awesome. All right. So you know, all throughout your journey, you're building these different companies and they're all focused on community. Then you kind of, I don't know if you stumbled into or how you kind of discovered DAOs, but I'd love to hear how you discovered DAOs and also how you discovered crypto, because I think those are two important, you know.
Yeah, pieces. I kind of rediscovered crypto. As I said, I was like, you know, working on crypto foundation before crypto was crypto. But so the most recent kind of return to crypto was when OpenLand was not doing great, we were looking to sell the company. And so we engaged in some M&A talks with a bunch of companies, and we very quickly learned that everyone who wants to buy OpenLand as a messenger is like nearly all crypto companies. they have the most capital, the most ambition, the most business opportunity ahead of them. And they were giving us an offer like, you know, 1% or less of their company for being their social layer, to become their social and mobile layer. And I felt like maybe like my business skills are worth more than 1%. Maybe I can do more. And I felt like, and also like doing business study of the future of those kind of Web3 platforms, in particular, maybe NFT and play to earn games and others, were seeing that they all goes towards DAOs. And I say, okay, so there are good companies for NFTs, there's good companies for crypto gaming, but the DAO tooling space is still wide open, or at least I don't see a clear like runaway leader, the category defining company. So this is probably where I can apply my skills, especially because I've built the kind of community infrastructure all my life.
Awesome. Okay, so take me through the kind of ideation of SuperDAO, and then also explain to me what is SuperDAO.
Sure. So the ideation was a competitive process in my head. So I was like, okay, so DAO space, crypto space looks very general, very, very promising, very like fast moving and interesting. So I'm going to generate a bunch of ideas and I try not to fall in love. I'm trying to like be, not to say stay objective. So I try to like generate a bunch of ideas, took a bunch of smart friends who are in crypto and ask them to stack rank my ideas and say, hey, those are the 5 ideas I'm thinking today. Which is number 1 out of those 5? And then I will, which is the worst idea out of those 5? And then I will throw out a couple ideas that were not very popular and add a few more and then add a few more and add a few more. And once I say, hey, I want to be a Shopify for DAOs, I want to be all-in-one DAO creation platform, that idea was always ranked number one. And no matter like how more ideas I would throw at my friends, they will say, no, go back to this one. And I'm like, okay, I guess if OpenLand doesn't work and if we don't have a good M&A opportunity, we just shut down OpenLand. I start something new and I start, you know, a DAO infrastructure company, because that seems to be the most well-received idea out of, and you know, I did secondary research. I didn't do much customer interviews before. I had the three friends who told me each that, yeah, there was exactly that. So I was like, hey, I have those 10 ideas. And they were like, hey, the DAO creation idea is the best idea. And by the way, I want to be your customer. Yeah, so I had a few of those who were like, I'm saying, which idea is good? And they were like, yeah, this idea is good, and I also want to be a customer. And so I'm like, okay, I guess that tells something. So now what SuperDAO is, that's more than a single sentence. But basically, we help with smart contracts, and we help with interfaces. So when you have an idea for a DAO, you want to deploy on a blockchain. You want to describe your organization, its kind of ownership system and governance system on a blockchain as a smart contract. So it's essentially a kind of affirmation or, you know, bylaws of your DAO. So we are no code generator for smart contracts for DAOs. Like, I answer a bunch of questions and we generate a smart contract for you. The smart contract from SuperDAO is upgradable and extendable and modular. That means you can change things over time, you can add things over time. You start with a very simple smart contract and then you become more complex. You might include, you know, sub-DAOs and community treasury and electronic signatures and tokens and NFTs and different forms of governance, all of that, you know, over time, not everything at once. And you can change things. You can start with one type of governance and then change to another type of governance and so on. Most DAOs that we see are starting with NFT collection and NFT airdrop for founding contributors and then NFT sale for early adopters. So you give NFTs for free for the closest circle, then you sell NFT for future users, then you sell token warrants for future tokens to private accredited investors, and then eventually you have a publicly traded token and you list on exchanges, both decentralized like Uniswap and centralized like Coinbase, FTX, and Binance. So that's one part of what you do. You come to us, you say, hey, Yuri, I need a smart contract for my DAO. And I say, fine, here it is. And the second one is, you're like, yeah, I have a smart contract. Like, how do I see things? So I say, now you also have a DAO workspace. So the DAO workspace is a place that you can log in with your wallet and see things like member directory, private news feed for your members, treasury dashboard to seeing all your assets in one place, and contributor center when you can publish tasks and pay people either in your own token or in stable coins or in Ether or in giveaways and, you know, RFP, like requests for proposals and grants and whatnot. So that's kind of the DAO workspace. Eventually, we hope that DAO workspace from SuperDAO will work with third-party smart contracts as well as definitely other third-party DAO tools can access the basically a member roster on SuperDAO smart contract and provide additional member experiences and token-gated experiences. So think of that as two levels. Kind of the smart contract is a DAO backend and the DAO workspace is a DAO frontend. But we want the full interoperability, our backend with third-party frontends and our frontend with third-party backends.
That's it. I mean, yeah, totally amazing. Okay, so the SuperDAO users, I feel like this like SuperDAO kind of appeals to both kind of user classes, if you will. People that are totally new to DAOs, they can come in and they can easily spin something up. People that are really, really in the weeds, they can fully customize their DAO. And is that kind of how you see the main user bases, like hardcore users and kind of the initial entry level users?
Yeah. So first of all, we use the terms members and creators. So most DAOs have a kind of core operating team of, you know, 10 to 100 people or 2 to 100 people. And then they have membership, which is, you know, tens, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, maybe 100,000 people. And in terms of DAO creators, there are the operating DAOs and formation stage DAOs, right? So the operating DAOs, the DAOs who already either introduced their token or introduced their first NFT collection, basically already have the blockchain presence. And the formation stage, they have the idea, they're gathering, allies and writing roadmap, but they're not yet on chain. We currently primarily work with idea stage DAOs that want to launch within the next 3 months. We will definitely work with already created DAOs, and we have tools that come up and coming and will be available for them as well. That will take a little bit more time. There are many other ways to categorize DAO creators. So the DAO creators that we're looking for are the ones who are most decisive. So the ones who want to start doing things, not deliberating for 3 months and say, okay, so let's start it out. So let's start with the first NFT collection. Let's start with a simple artwork. We can upgrade it later. Let's give out the first 100 NFTs for free to friends and, ambassadors and influencers who help us off the ground. Let's write together a roadmap. Let's introduce the NFT sale. Let's do NFT-based crowdfunding. And then if we see more traction, let's bring in professional investors, set up maybe a legal anchor, a traditional company with token warrants, and let's build the thing.
Awesome. Okay, so are DAOs kind of like this new form of incorporation? Because you have, corporations, you have LLCs, and now yep. DAOs. Would you consider them just like a new format? And if so, what is their biggest differentiator, between the old formats?
Yeah, so a DAO is a way to start an organization. There are three benefits or three advantages: fundraising, growth, and employment. So on fundraising, you get better valuations. So if you go to investors and say, hey, we're a token-bound company, eventually we'll be token-first, eventually we want to be traded on Binance and FTX and Coinbase, we don't want to go to NASDAQ, please give us money, you will get probably 4 times higher valuation. So the seed stage valuations on equity side are on average, 10 million, and on tokens are 40 million, and pre-seed is 5 million on equity and, 20 on tokens, even if you don't have a token, on token warrants. And so that's one story. The other story is there are just more appetite for the same categories, same idea. You say, you go into saying, hey, I'm building a direct competitor to YouTube and it's a traditional company. Good luck raising money for YouTube Challenger. Now, if you say, hey, I'm a YouTube Challenger and we are a token-based company, we're a distributed company, we're going to be token traded, we're going to use the Web3 playbook, and we're going to build a new video network. And that's, there is a few of those, and they raise, in valuations in hundreds of millions with, very preliminary traction. And so, yeah, basically you can re-challenge the monopoly winners in legacy internet and technology categories and rethink the every technology category from a start. So that's on the fundraising side. You can also raise money directly from future customers from NFT through NFTs and as well as from professional investors through token warrants. And so that's on the fundraising side, high valuation and ability to enter the categories that you can't enter with traditional fundraising. Growth, you can give people NFT-based ownership and, token-based ownership, people who will advocate for you, so who will promote you because they feel ownership and they feel the shared upside. So if you were thoughtful on how you distribute the high-tier NFTs and tokens and promises of future tokens, you can build an advocacy base. It's essentially the first credible alternative to Google and Facebook in terms of investing in your growth. So basically before you need to raise a bunch of money from VCs and then spend all of that on Facebook ads and Google ads. And that's kind of getting limited. Like the ads have less return, people develop advertising blindness and the ads got more expensive, things like that. And privacy concerns. And then the new way is to find a lot of trusted people who really believe in your thing, give them token and NFTs, and let them educate their friends and friends of friends on the awesome thing that you're building. And it's kind of influencer marketing, but through equity sharing. So you basically share equity with those kind of advocates of your product. It's a little bit like, Steph Curry, he got an equity in Under Armour through Curry brand and not just, paid by, endorsement commercials. And he has also governance rights in terms of, like, you know, designs of shoes and things like that. So that's what everyone wants. The people want to be like advocates with an equity position in your business. And that's what DAOs enable at scale. And then the third reason to do that is employment. So if you try to employ 1,000 people across 100 countries in 1 week, legally compliant way, impossible. Too many forms, too many regulations, too many concerns. You would need to hire 500 people to employ people in 100 countries and have like legal local entities and taxations and forms. I tried to employ myself in California for the company where I'm the sole founder and the majority equity holder. I filled like 20 forms and signed a bunch of docs and got a bunch of paper mail and still not sure I'm fully, you know, I followed everything to the T. I need to spend, yeah, I don't know, thousands of hours to just learn what California wants from me in terms of employing myself. Like, I need to pay worker compensation for myself against myself in case I will sue myself for injuring myself. Like, how easy that is. And in crypto, it's kind of a moot point because the DAO exists currently outside of national jurisdiction. So if a DAO engages with 1,000 people and give them tasks and then say, hey, you can do those tasks. And maybe if you complete those tasks, maybe I'll pay you in Ether or in my own token or in my own NFTs. Then it more resembles like a contractual relationship with a foreign employer. So there are still tax implications on the contributor side. But the employer side, the DAO side, seems to be outside of each individual country. So that currently not fully regulated. So the relationship link between the DAO and the contributor is not well described in existing regulation. It's not a contractual relationship, a consulting relationship. It's not really a full employment because it's part-time, it's voluntarily self-directed, it result-based. It might be paid by the community vote, not by the DAO. It does not even decide who got paid and who got paid how much. Maybe up to the DAO members to decide. Maybe algorithmically paid. And so... it's really outside of the current regulation, similar to early day Uber and Airbnb kind of situation. So eventually it's going to be regulated in some way, negotiated, but right now it's not. And that allows you to build a well-compensated kind of contributor armies of, you know, thousands of people who work together in a loosely coupled way. So those are the three reasons. It's basically raising at high valuation for larger, broad sense range of ideas, grow without spending money on ads, but rather, you know, spending equity on ambassadors and employing thousands of people through fluid and algorithmic and request-based and grant-based and, programmatic-based employment.
Amazing. Awesome. Okay, so if you had to kind of sum up what SuperDAO enables that is just steps above anyone else currently in the market, how would you sum that up?
Well, it's the easiest way for go-to-market for DAOs. It's like you get a smart contract within a week talking to us. You can distribute founding contributor tier NFTs right away. You can sell NFTs to early adopters. You can introduce a token that is locked against trading, that exists as a token warrant for professional credit investors and core team members and key strategic partners, and then add modules on smart contract level for governance and treasury and electronic signatures and token gated community resources and all that stuff. And we also, you know, pursue interoperability so that by doing setup on SuperDAO, you can be compatible with thousands of, currently hundreds, but hopefully thousands of DAO tooling companies out there.
So you've already touched upon this, you know, in previous answers, but you guys have a kind of the front and the back end. I think on your website, you call it the formation stack and the operating stack. Can you kind of just describe?
Yeah, those are different terminology. We will upgrade the website. Follow this podcast, not the website in early March. Hopefully, like in a few weeks, we'll like fully upgrade the website. So essentially, again, I think let's use the front end and back end. So the back end is what's on chain. It's code. You don't read the code every day. It's what describes the rulings on how your organization works. Do you have tokens? Do you have NFTs? Who has the voting power? Do you have the community-owned wallets and other assets like NFTs? How you define memberships for token-gated and member-gated access on other platforms like, I don't know, Google Folder or something, and things like that. So that's on-chain, and off-chain, like the interface is a humanly usable application that reads and sometimes writes the information back to the smart contract and then verifies who is the current member, who can access the DAO workspace. And if you access your DAO space, then basically you can see the member directory and member-only content and the assets dashboard and contributor compensation and so on.
Awesome. Okay, so how do you think about SuperDAO's defensibility? Like, are you thinking in terms of the easiest user experience will just end up winning, most likely?
No, I think it's in chapters. So the first chapter is, yeah, so it's easiest to start, and also advice. I think we're best in advice. So if you're unsure, like, what's the right setup? Do I also need the traditional legal entity? Should I start with NFTs or tokens? How many tiers? How many limits? What do I need? What don't I need? Is my roadmap good enough? Who should be my partners? Can you, like, you know, is it good for, you know, professional fundraising down the road? Talk to me, like, you know, direct message me on Twitter, on Telegram. And Telegram is just my last name, Lifshitz. Yeah, so we advise, you know, hundreds and hundreds of DAOs. We hold DAO workshops a couple times a week, and where we, like, you know, live in Zooms, typically 50 to 100 people per day, to, you know, advising projects. So basically we start with advice. We're best at advice now, and then we're easiest to start a DAO, and you have no dependency on us because it's a smart contract on a chain. You can always, you know, we don't have control. You can continue using that independent of us, or you can fork it, and, you know, you can develop it further on yourself or just mirror it by another smart contract and so on. The second thing is the mid chapter, kind of a few months down the road. It's all about network effects. So we're trying to build an ecosystem around SuperDAO, where SuperDAO is a seed of an ecosystem, or like a gravity point to an ecosystem. An ecosystem is more like, you know, decentralized and loosely coordinated. And so it has a few elements of it, which is a contributor network, an investor network, and a tooling network. So we want to see, you know, hundreds and eventually thousands of DAO toolings that work integrated and compatible with the SuperDAO smart contract. We want to see thousands of investors who are comfortable to invest in DAOs as long as they're formed with SuperDAO, very much like Delaware C Corp become a standard for if you want to raise venture money, you want to be in Delaware. If you want to raise DAO money, you want to set up with SuperDAO. And number three is contributors. So as we have like first few thousand DAOs on our platform, there will be, you know, hundreds of thousands of active contributors. And then for each new contributor, like if you start a new DAO and you want a lot of contributors, it's easier to start in SuperDAO because that's where all contributors are, and they already comfortable contributing to five DAOs here. So it will be easier for them to contribute to sixth DAO on the same platform. Those three network effects. Long term, it's, I think, about financial incentives. So when and if we'll have a token, we will reserve a huge amount of the tokens that we can invest in DAOs and SuperDAO, or do treasury swaps, or do lending based on milestones, or maybe bonuses and grants. And so we hope to be maybe one of the largest DAO investors in the world, hopefully deploying, you know, billions of dollars worth of tokens to... Basically, it's like economic development arm, you know, like state of Texas gave economic incentives to Elon Musk to move to Texas to build a factory there. We want to give everyone in the world an incentive to start a DAO versus LLC.
Love that. All right. So, I have to ask, is SuperDAO a DAO or are you guys a corporation?
Yeah, we're a DAO track company. So that means we follow exactly the same playbook as we advise everyone else to follow. So you have the operating entity and you have a DAO. So we're currently both. So we have an on-chain smart contract that we use currently primarily for testing purposes. We have the Delaware C Corp. So Delaware C Corp is an operating entity for employment and fiat banking and receiving investment, like professional accredited investments in the form of equity investment with future token distribution. And eventually we'll build a separate legal entity foundation that will issue tokens for some time private and then eventually tradable. And those tokens go back to investors and team and many other places. And as I said, eventually investments in treasury swaps with DAOs and SuperDAO. And so there will be NFTs, there will be tokens, there will be community governance, there will be community controlled wallets. It's all coming. We will be dog fooding. So we'll be the first customer for every new module on SuperDAO will be the first customer of it.
Love it. Okay, so if you had to kind of sum up, and you've already touched upon this before, but if you had to sum up the main pain points around DAOs today, because you know a lot of people argue, they're like, oh, DAOs are just like Discords with a token or whatnot. So like, what are the main issues with DAOs, and how do you think you can solve that?
Yeah, I would say time to market. So it's just too long. It takes too long to figure out the DAO, and most of the time is figuring out what to do, not the tooling. So you're just debating, like, do we need LLC? I've heard Wyoming LLC. I've heard unincorporated partnerships. I've heard that. I've heard Dubai is good. I heard Cayman is now the hottest thing. Like, what's going on? Should we have NFTs or token? So this indecision and lack of like template or best practice, or like, hey, just use the same as everyone else, kind of standardization, I would say, like informal standardization. Right now, if you are starting Delversi Corp, there is no thinking. You're not engaging a lawyer to write your bylaws. You go to a service like Cupbase and click three buttons and they generate a Delversi Corp for you. So we want the same in DAO world. So kind of template based, no code DAO setup. That's what we are solving right now. So once that's solved, then there would be, you know, the expansion of tooling to covering more productivity areas, and then we're building the network effects. So there is, you know, a solid marketplace where you can find all the DAO contributors, where you can connect with all the DAO investors, and, you know, can raise private money for future tokens first, and then, eventually. So the late stage markets already exist, you know, the decentralized, decentralized token exchanges, but they don't work for idea stage DAOs because that would look like security. And so we need to create a kind of an ecosystem for support for early stage DAOs.
So do you think that the current regulatory environment in the US and how DAOs exist today, can those coexist, or do we need a massive update on the regulatory framework in order for DAOs to actually exist in more of a acceptable manner?
Yeah, I would say it's a very comparable to Airbnb and Uber. That means you can start doing DAO work today. You can take of DAO advantages. You can take advantage of currently under-regulated areas. And then as time progresses, the regulators, I think, will be more aware, and they will be more active, and they will be asking questions, and they will have attempts to regulate and figure things out, and eventually we'll go from fully unregulated to somewhat regulated. Whether that would be fully compatible with full advantages of DAO, so they would be overly regulated, where like the, you know, you throw the baby with the water. I don't know. It depends on, you know, how well the regulation will work.
So do we need DAOs? I feel like we have, you know, LLCs, those work pretty well. Corporations, those work pretty well. Like, why do we need DAOs?
Well, I go back to my previous answer. So it's fundraising, growth, and employment. So what is the block with growth? 500 shareholder limit on non-public, like on private companies. So they're currently, you can't give shares to more than 500 people. So if you have like 1,000 contributors and want to give them equity, it's not currently legal in the United States. You can do like a special purpose vehicle and like promises of future equity or equity equivalents, blah, blah, blah. But that basically shows that the current regulation doesn't work. The same with employment. It is not currently fully recognized how a single company can employ people in 100 countries. So if you do, you know, a gaming DAO where gamers are everywhere in the same game, how do I pay or, you know, compensate for contributions for people who contribute from 100 countries? Very hard right now. So I would say the current system is very national minded. It's like US is the world. And then again, there is also the somewhat restrictive approach from venture investors to founders. They say, "Hey, Johnny, if you're from Poland or Thailand, come to US, do Delaware C Corp, and then we'll consider you investing." And most of the money that is invested, even if the source of money and LPs are global, they operate with in the United States presence, and they demand and require US anchoring for the new startup. And so what if there are three friends from three countries and none of them is United States, and they want to start a company and raise money from people that from investment fund in fifth company and the sources of capital in the seventh and eighth country? How we facilitate that? Why it should be all in the United States? And is it the best way? And is it a fair way? And
love that. I love that. It's basically bringing, updating the operating mechanism for companies into the internet era.
Let me actually be more radical here. I'm strongly disagree with Chris Dixon. So Chris Dixon is effectively taking a nationalist view. So in a way that he says, I would like to see United States to be the best country for crypto. I would like United States to be the most crypto friendly. I want United States to take care a leading market share in crypto economy and be the biggest beneficiary of the crypto, productivity in the world. This is very fair take. I mean, if you're born in the United States, if you like your home country, it's a great take. There is also the opposite take. I want every country to benefit from crypto economy in an equal way. That's a non-United States viewpoint of view. And I'm leaning towards that. I think you should have equal economic rights wherever you was born. And I hope that the crypto environment that we built is built that way, is bringing more fairness and equal opportunity. And so right now it's like, hey, you need to first pass 10 tests on United States immigration, and then you need to convince US-based investors. And it's all very US-centric. I'm product for that. I was born in Russia. I moved to the United States for better economic opportunity. And I think I should, if I would be born, 50 years later, the future me or, people of future generations just should have equal chance wherever they were born. And DAOs make it so that everyone started at the same place.
I love that. Amazing. Okay, so... All right, so when do you think?
By the way, do you agree? Do you agree with me with Chris Dixon?
No, I mean of course I believe in the metaverse, right? And what we're all doing and building here is not for one country; it's for the internet, right? So wherever you have internet, that's where the opportunity should be. So yeah, 100%
agree. All
right.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, when are DAOs going to go mainstream? We've been talking about DAOs, and everyone's talking about DAOs, and they're the hot thing. But when will people actually? I think they're going to be just like. No one says, "Oh, I set up my LLC or I set up my corporation." It's just like, "Oh, I set up my company," and people don't care what the actual incorporation is. So at some point, we're going to reach where, "Oh, I set up a company," and then it will be a DAO, and people won't even care. So at what point do we reach that level of mainstream?
Yeah, September 30th this calendar year.
Oh, wait, tell me.
I'm just joking. I think that the DAO tooling today is not good enough. Companies like SuperDAO need to do more work. So it takes us another half a year to get things better. And right now we do a lot of manual work. We'll work with hand-holding our customers and our other tools in the market as well. So we're building templates. We're building the success stories. We're in the same phase as, Bored Apes in May or whatever, in the fall of last year. And so we need a few very high-profile success stories. And then there will be August. And then in August, everyone is taking a break. And then September 1st, everyone coming back. And there are a lot of high-profile success stories of DAOs. Not a lot, but, dozens. And that you want to be like them. And the DAO tooling catching up. And so September 1st, they start working. And then suddenly September 30th of this calendar year, there would be, 10,000 DAOs created per day or something. It's similar to, NFT explosion with, there was following, 4 or 5 months after the Bored Apes kind of breakout. And so basically the individual breakout stories will happen this spring. And then the mass scale DAO craze, I would say early fall this year.
Amazing. Okay, so
but still, it's still early adopter crowd. I mean, it's not like the Johnny who is doing a pizza joint in Nashville will do it.
Right, of course. All right, so give me like the 5 year, like in 5 years, where will SuperDAO be? And in 10 years, where will SuperDAO be?
Wow, we're trying to plan for the next week. So 5 years, we'd like to see several million DAOs in the world. We'd like ourselves personally being a place where at least a million DAOs was born. We'd like to see DAOs be successful. That means in the long run, I would say employment. That means, 100 million people take part of their income by contributing to DAOs. So I want more people to do part-time work, passion work, DAO contribution work, kind of self-initiated, loosely, algorithmically directed, not, chain of command kind of type of work. In 10 years, I'd like to see a more fair world. I'd like to see a positive implication in terms of the fair economic opportunity for people to start companies, to build new ventures, even in the currently monopolized markets across the globe, and also having the upside. So more upside for creators, more upside for players, more upside for artists, more upside for developers, more upside for marketers and content writers. So I would say more economic prosperity, like better, like a new path to middle class through DAO employment, DAO country, like DAO work. In 5 years, just, lots of DAOs, a lot of DAO contributors.
I love that.
I'd say healthy economy in 5 years, better global economy overall, fair global economy.
New path to the middle class through DAOs. That's super, super exciting. I again, love that. All right, so is there a certain, and this might be an odd question, but is there a certain subsector within the DAO space that you're super excited about?
Yeah, how much time we have?
We have as long as you want.
I have so many sectors that I'm excited about. Yeah, I'll jump in a few. Obviously, investment DAO is very, very active. And I think the investment DAO thing is the reason why they are popular is because we want to enable early stage middle class investments opportunities. So right now, middle class is not allowed to do early stage investment. So if you're not qualified for accredited investor, if you're based outside the United States, you're basically nearly impossible for you to invest in like Y Combinator class companies. So that means you can only invest in late stage companies like Nasdaq listed. And even that is hard if you're like living in somewhere like Africa or even like in, I don't know, Russia or something. I don't think you're living in Russia. You can invest in like from a mobile app to Nasdaq listed equities. I think it's still very hard in Poland or whatever. And why more people want to invest? Because most of the upside is no longer at individual level. Like, for example, in middle centuries or something, like if you're a baker and you have a bakery, you start a bakery, you do good work, and then maybe you prosper. You become a wealthy person, who knows. And then right now, if you start a bakery, you will have dependency on the global platforms, like, the global market of flour or whatever, and the bakery equipment, and there are like three monopolists. And if you're like starting approaching prosperity, they will just increase prices, so you barely survive. And so the platforms have opportunity over local entrepreneurs and local regional business. And so all the profits are in companies like Google's and Microsoft's. And because again, like Facebook eating the local business, and Google, they're eating local businesses because they basically take all the surplus of revenue and increase the advertising requirements to the amount where basically your borderline break even. As people seeing that it is harder and harder to prosper as individual and small business, basically they want to share in larger companies. But again, the late stage companies, they all the upside is, or like most of the upside is already done. And so basically the new middle class dream is not to prosper through through you know, entrepreneurship and small business building. It's more like investing early for something that was recognizes something early, being an early contributor and investor and token holder and NFT holder, and then grow with the thing. It kind of like you, like, I don't know, another analogy would be like, as an athlete, in if it's a regional society, you can be the fastest, strongest person in your village. But now when we have Olympics and global sports, you can't impress anyone by being the strongest person in your village. So instead you become a, you know, a soccer fan or NBA fan, and like you share a, like, status value of the wins of your favorite teams or something. And so investment becomes almost as important for self you know, self-esteem and self-recognition as your own work. And this is also like alternative to nationalism, where you like invest your self-esteem in the success of your nation state. And so more people are looking, okay, I'm maybe like my employment opportunities are somewhat limited, or like maybe I'm not the genius, like the biggest genius of the world. So at least I will, you know, invest in some early stage things, and maybe I'm not the greatest musician, but I would support the musicians and I will share the upside of those musicians and things like that. And so investment becomes a big part of the social fabric of the country, of the earth. So if, you know, a few centuries ago, everyone was a, you know, farm workers. A farm work was a basically a dominant form of activity, right? And then it was factory work, right? So the number one employment like would be factory work, and then it was office work, right? So right now maybe the office work is the biggest chunk of like human productivity. So maybe a century or two, maybe, you know, robotics, like what Andrew Yang said, you know, automation, whatever. And so then everyone is an investor. And so investor is the biggest role in the world. And then that means there is a movement toward democratization of investment. So, and the United States and other countries, they have a very restrictive law. And that law was designed from Depression era when like, hey, we're protecting you against yourself. We're not allowing a average person to invest in early stage projects because a lot of them are scam and everyone will lose money. And we don't want poor people get people like lower middle class to get even less wealthy. I think there is some truth to that, but more and more people want to invest. Like a Gen Z, everyone wants to invest. And so DAOs is basically saying, okay, fine, we can't invest in Googles of the world. We can't invest in Y Combinator graduates of the world. Let us at least invest in DAOs. That's why NFTs, I think, are so popular. I don't know. That was a long speech saying that.
No, I love
investment
that.
Rights. It's like a human, like human right, like every human deserve to be like equal investment rights with rich people.
No, I think it's, you said like investing is the new form of tribalism. I think that you said something around that, and that's a really interesting kind of thing to touch upon, because you're right. Like now that we're living in this more globalized internet connected world, you can't necessarily be you said the fastest person in your village. But you can join the soccer team or like your DAO or whatever, and if that soccer team does well, then you feel great, you know, you're excited, and you know, it's kind of similar to like, okay, I invest in this DAO, I'm part of this DAO, and I have this token, and if that DAO does well, then you know, I compensate and I feel great, and it's kind of like this, and like this is my tribe, like these are my people. So
yep,
it's really exactly. Really interesting ramifications from that. It's I'm sure we could have a whole podcast about that just, you know, by itself. But you know, speaking of kind of investing DAOs and all these different DAOs. Tell me about Alliance DAO. I saw on your Twitter that you're a member of Alliance DAO. I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, it's the best thing in the world. I'm very excited about them. It's an accelerator. So it's similar to Y Combinator in some ways. It's accelerator for DAOs and Web3 projects and crypto projects in general, including gaming and decentralized finance and DAO tooling and NFT tooling and other areas. It is very well run program. It is run by a team of people who are exceptionally passionate about it, and they love the domain. I think that's a huge difference. The Y Combinator, by this kind of late stage, where like they are over 15 years old, they are mechanical experts. They're expert in fundraising movement and the benchmarking and the general kind of template of being a startup. But by by the end of that, the passion for individual underlying domains, whether that's hardware or consumer or crypto or biology, is kind of getting diluted. YC is excited about making startups, not excited by individual markets. They don't have time. Maybe they don't have other areas of focus. They're amazing at what they do. But the Alliance is a team of enthusiasts who just love, like really love what they do. And not at the company building level, but at the underlying domain expertise. They can talk for hours about the different forms of governance and bridging between chains and the advantages of, you know, different developer ecosystems and smart contract details. And they're very like flying to the ground, like close to the ground. And it's also a small program. It's currently 30 companies per class, 3 classes per year. It's also a more generous program, having much more flexible terms for startups, and it has insane community. I would say the quality of the community around it, in terms of like the people who invested in Alliance as, you know, LPs and the previous graduates and the core team who runs the program, everyone is at the frontier of what's possible. Feels very, you know, very close circuit. I'm so happy to be part of it.
Amazing. Okay, so zooming out now, what are your thoughts on the current market environment? That could be anywhere from like, you know, the fundraising side to just like the market sentiment to just like broadly. I'd love to hear your general thoughts on the current market environment.
Yeah, I think we have a talent migration to Web3. So all the smartest people in Web2 are thinking about Web3. More opportunity, faster cycles. People make decisions fast. Everyone is excited. Everyone is optimistic. A lot of markets are open, not monopolized. Fundraising feels easier. People form teams very quickly. Things are much more fluid. The path to liquidity is 3 years. You can be in 5 projects at once. It's just a lot of excitement. And so for us, it was like 1% of, you know, smartest people in Web3. And then it was 5%. There's 10%. And so when there's such a critical mass that basically if you're free in like your labor movement, so you're not in the lockup schedule, not in the middle of the big project, and you're just thinking whether my next chapter would be in Web2 and Web3, nearly everyone chooses Web3. They're like, okay, I'll spend a week or 2 weeks to study, and then 2 weeks in, they're like, okay, I got it.
Amazing. Awesome. All right, Yuri, are you ready for the closing questions?
Yes.
Okay, cool. What is your single favorite DAO?
Yeah, I would say Alliance DAO is cool.
Oh wait, so what besides Alliance DAO?
All right. I don't know, CryptoKitties, that not really a DAO, but the NFT collection, they have so many mechanics. They were like a pioneer of things. But I would say that's one of the best projects.
Okay, awesome. What is your most controversial thought relating to DAOs?
DAOs should not be decentralized.
Sorry, you say should not be decentralized? Ooh, yes. Okay, wait, we have to dive deeper there.
Sure, you ask for some controversy. Well, again, there are two generations of DAOs. The first generation of DAOs were decentralized and autonomous, and that meant that they can pass the test of security commission to being classified as non-securities and therefore freely traded on exchanges. And they said, hey, this is a protocol. It's already well-developed engineering-wise. We have a bunch of operating teams, but none of them is mission-critical. Everything is coded on-chain. Things can exist without any one individual. Therefore, it's more like price of gold or oil. And therefore, they were, you know, unlocking the opportunity to be traded outside of NASDAQ. That was basically a forced kind of legal defense tactics. And then there was a second generation that was like, hey, we actually love the decentralization and autonomy is like, you know, being outside of legal systems and contributor compensation and growth incentives and all of this and that. But we actually don't really need the full decentralization, especially day one. And we don't actually have the product. So we definitely want the core team to have a mission critical role rather than, you know, being one of many. Like equal nodes. So we can't be decentralized on day one. And we actually don't want to be token traded on day one. We want to be eventually token traded, but not right away. So those kind of early stage DAOs, they are not decentralized. They're not autonomous. They're humans in control. And they eventually want to become more decentralized and more kind of codified and chained, but not right away. And I recently conducted a poll on Twitter on how to call them. So the winning submission was flexible DAOs. So basically, there is a classic DAOs and flexible DAOs. And so flexible DAOs are not decentralized, they're not autonomous, but they're on-chain. So they are flexible on-chain organizations. Still calling them DAO for marketing purposes.
So cool. So cool. I love that. That's very, very, very interesting. All right. If you could snap your fingers and instantly change or improve one thing in the crypto / NFT / DAO ecosystem, what would it be?
Yeah, I would legalize DAO employment.
So legalize DAO employment in the sense of like have the US government recognize when you're employed by a DAO?
Kind of. Yeah. Saying that DAO can employ people in any country, not US, everywhere. So that basically you can have a relationship with a DAO when you do the work and DAO pays you. And maybe there is a flat, simple tax, I don't know, 5% or something. But the DAO should not be required to follow the full kind of slew of benefits and whatnot, like the labor protection type of stuff. Because most of the DAO employed is fluid, is part-time, task-based, request for proposal. It's not really, you know, sitting in an office on it. It shouldn't be modeled after factory work.
Very cool. All right, last question. Where do you see the DAO ecosystem in 3 years?
Ecosystem wars. So very much like, you know, Android versus iOS or Mac versus Windows. I think there would be two or three ecosystems, not individual platforms, but ecosystem that consists of, you know, their own app stores and investor networks and contributor networks and tooling networks and smart contract frameworks and APIs and protocols. And there would be basically two or three camps that would split the market, and they might be, each ecosystem can be pretty community driven and decentralized in its own way, but it would be very clear ecosystems, like, you know, Solana versus Ethereum compatible chains we have on the chain level. So the DAO tooling level, there would be two or three ecosystems. We hope to, you know, be a gravity point or like a seed for one of those ecosystems. We don't anticipate to be the only ecosystem, so I guess two or three ecosystems.
Amazing. Awesome. Yuri, this has been just an awesome conversation. I loved hearing about your insanely cool background. And of course, what you're doing now with DAOs is really, really impressive at SuperDAO. And just your thoughts generally broadly, you know, on the DAO space is really, really, I've never heard anyone kind of have similar theses as you. And it's super exciting. If people want to find out more about yourself or find out more about SuperDAO, where should they go? What should they do?
Yeah, so the website is superdao.co. And the Twitter is superdao_co. I'm also on Twitter, Yuri Lifshitz in one world. I'm also on Telegram. It's just my last name, Lifshitz. You can direct message me everywhere. We advise DAOs in hundreds per week. Come DM me, get to our workshops, you know, start a DAO on SuperDAO.
Yuri, thank you so much for coming on. This has been awesome.
Thank you, Andrea. That was a blast.
Hey everyone, stay tuned for more episodes of the ZemaRed podcast and subscribe to the ZemaRed newsletter for more info on all things NFTs. Thanks so much for listening.